When the iPhone XS smart battery case came out, we both bought one, Mayo, right? Like you've got one for the 10, XS, I believe, but for your 10. And then I bought one from a XS Max that I said I'd buy and knowingly return because I wouldn't keep that phone for that long. And then having put it on the phone itself, I immediately just knew this thing is way too big for me. Well, something that happened a few weeks ago was a friendly listener of the show, listener Tyler, found out that knew from the show that I wanted to trade my I didn't like my XS Max. In a Twitter exchange with some colleagues, I kind of not really jokingly said that I would love to trade my XS Max for any other iPhone, like upgrade from a XS Max to a XS, like I think as like a reply to kind of the retail push for telling people with XSs to upgrade their iPhones. And listener Tyler replied back to say that he would actually love to trade his XS for a XR or a XS Max, and so we made an arrangement, and sure enough, we did, and that's why I went out without an iPhone for a week. Was I had sent mine off and just used the watch while it was in transit, which was a whole neat experience. But then his gold XS, which is the color I kind of actually wanted after launch, just after the return period was over, it set in, arrived. Love the size. It's everything I thought that I liked about the smaller size is true, and it just feels neat, like to have the same technology in the smaller phone this year. But it even before the phone arrived, I had ordered the XS smart battery case because I wanted to try out that size. And from day one of having the XS arrive, I had the black Apple leather case and for the XS and the white Apple smart battery case for the XS. And I thought I would just try out the battery case, but then use the black leather case like most of the time, except for like weekends or maybe like getaways. But it turns out like I've been using the smart battery case since that iPhone arrived about 2 weeks ago, maybe over 2 weeks ago now. And I think it's all relative really, but like going from the bigger, heavier XS Max to the XS with the battery case, it doesn't feel like crazy bulky to me. And so I've actually been using like every single day and not taking it off at all. The only time I took it off was like once to go to dinner where it didn't fit well in my pocket. And I kind of, in like, just used the leather case. But in other situations, I probably just would have like used the iPhone with no case because it wasn't like a situation where I thought I might drop it. But I have to say, like, I've really been happy with the iPhone XS smart battery case in a way that the max size never would have worked for me because it just felt like too big and bulky. But I've since also like recommended that case people that have XS Maxes in my family to family. Like if you need more battery life, use this case because it will give you that. And a case that's not, you don't have to like worry about like the power button on it and charging of the different cable and like all that kind of stuff. So you haven't been using it every day, right? Like yours is just for trial and then you don't, that was it.
Yeah, mine's in a drawer.
Right.
Like, I mean, we spoke about this when we covered this first time around. It's, my, lifestyle and working habits mean I'm at a desk and then, I'm mostly at home. So the going out and needing constant battery life isn't much of a issue. I will use it when it's traveling, but seeing as you shared your funny story about your Twitter exchange, I might as well share mine. I went to return the case, not because it didn't work. It worked fine, but I just realized, I didn't like it. I'd written up my coverage of it. I knew my opinions weren't going to change. And then I went through the process to get it returned. And the Apple store told me they are not allowed to ship it back. So here's your money. Just keep it, which is kind of funny and backs up the whole like legal argument about the fact that they came with 0% battery in the first place.
Yeah,
remember, it was
at
like a
least in the
controversy
UK.
whether it was by force or, they just being lazy. Well, I'm pretty sure they're not being lazy, not taking them back off my hands. So it feels like there's more of a some sort of legal pressure here.
Yeah, at least in the UK. I'm not sure that you'd have that experience in the US where they'd say, just keep it. And I don't know, but I saw someone else, a listener who, and friend who, had theirs defect, like where you take it off at the top, but it flips back. By the where the cutout for the mute switch is, it just kind of tore without like being removed often. And they I think in that case they just sent a replacement, and like, you know, again, they don't say like mail us back the bad one. Something to do with that battery in there, at least in the UK.
Yeah, durability is definitely a open question still with these cases, because the last, like the iPhone 7 versions, people would complain, like after a year they'd get very battered and they'd like disintegrate in your hand way more than just the normal silicone or leather cases would.
Yeah, so I got the white one the second go around because I you know, I plan on having this iPhone for a while now. And
lies.
Well, you'll see.
That's what you said about the XS Max.
Yeah. Anyway, and this case too, and I've now used it every day for, you know, half a month now. And I've got no complaints about like how it's holding up, but I've seen people with brand new black smart battery cases where it looks like it's like peeling, almost like a sunburn, and then the skin peels afterwards. And I think it's a difference in the color of how durable it is, but just in general, like part of the appeal for me is like over the weekend, I was at breakfast and I found out that I had family a couple of states over that were like kind of doing like a Mardi Gras vacation with an Airbnb. And they said, by the way, we're, you know, hour and a half away. You should come visit. And it was just like I had the opportunity, like I could leave like eating out breakfast and just go straight there and not even like pack an iPhone charger or anything. Just like I went for like a quick overnight trip with like the clothes on my back, my car and my phone and watch. And the only thing was like I needed to charge my watch. So I thought to keep the phone will be fine, but like the watch, I will definitely need a charge with workouts. But I had a spare watch charger that I could use in the car. So in that like hour and a half drive to and from, I could charge the watch. So it wasn't an issue, but for the iPhone, like going out to a parade and taking like lots of pictures because I was with family and, you know, seeing people I didn't see often. I used my iPhone like a lot, and I wasn't on Wi-Fi and I wasn't like at home. So, and it was great. Like it was kind of perfect for that situation. And I think if I didn't have the smart battery case on like full time, if I just used it for like, you know, a 1 week WWDC trip, then I wouldn't have had it with me or like remember to pack it and that kind of thing. But if it holds its charge every time, like without using it, then that's pretty good. Then, you know, if you've got it like in a go bag. But I think like as a day-to-day case, like for the 10R size is probably not for me, and the 10S Max is definitely not for me. It really felt like a scanner checkout, like a checkout scanner for like a retail store. But in the 10S size, it's much more manageable, and I really like it. So far, so good.
But it's because you're downsizing, though, from the 10S Max in general. Like, yeah, your muscles are already warmed up to, you know, bulk and heaviness.
Yeah, so it's all relative. It's all what you're used to.
Yeah, if you were being sensible and just doing what I do, because based on laptop choices, phone choices, iPad choices, you're slowly converging on my exact lineup of products. If you'd have done what I do and only be on the 5.8-inch train forever, I think you'd be having similar complaints that I, you know, talked about before. It's just the delta between it on and off is so big, and if you don't need it, it feels like just dead, essentially dead weight. Like, yeah. It's the perfect travel case a week at WWDC. Like, I'm pretty sure everyone that goes there just buys these cases because, you know, you use your phone all day long and you're away from home, it's traveling around. Like, they're perfect for that kind of thing. And because of the way they're designed, they're actually pretty easy to take on and off because you can just peel the back. Like, that's one of the things I don't like about my leather case normal one, is that if you actually want to take it off, it kind of feels like you have to like break the seals of the way you have to kind of prise it open. And I'm always worried if I'm going to like scratch the camera bit where you push in there to like get it to pop out. Whereas with the smart battery case, it doesn't really have that problem because the top of it is very flexible. So you just pull it down and slide the rest of it out.
Yeah. The other thing, I've had a few issues with it with wireless charging. So it supports wireless charging. And even when the case has 0%, according to like the battery widget on the Today View section of iOS, you can lay your iPhone has some battery, but then the case has zero from what it says, which must be like more than zero for it to know. Otherwise, it just wouldn't show up at all. But I found that usually it works wirelessly charged from zero, but sometimes it doesn't, and it'll be like when it isn't ideal, like you put your iPhone battery with 60% down at night to charge wirelessly and thinking like overnight, it'll be fine. Even if it's slow, you'll wake up with a full charge. But then you'll wake up and it'll be like at 55% instead. And the light on the wireless charging mat will light up and looks like it's working. But unless you can confirm, like when you first put it down, oh, it's charging. I found it to be a little bit iffy and I haven't worked out a pattern of like what it is. And like even right now, I've got it on a mat and it's flashing. The light is flashing yellow. This is one of the Mophie chargers that like Apple stores sell. And the other one I tried is like a Belkin one. And I think it's just alignment, but it's really particular about like where you put it. And because it's the case too, it's trickier about like getting it right. Whereas the iPhone itself or the iPhone plus just a regular case is not an issue for me. And then I sent you a screen recording earlier of just like the battery charging and uncharging and charging and uncharging. And it was just like, it was just bugging out. And
yeah, like in the battery widget, you just see it appear and get removed and then reinserted and then get removed as it like obviously oscillated between 0 and 0.1%.
Yeah. And the fix for that was to take it out and put it back in like anything else. And this is on the iOS 12.2 beta. So I part of me wonders if it's not like physical alignment, but if it's software, if it's that like...
I have seen other people complain about that thing. Like when they first came out, people were saying that if the case is dead, but your phone has any battery, when you go to wirelessly charge, sometimes it doesn't work.
And it's supposed to.
Whereas it's more reliable if the case is not completely depleted. If it's, you know, like 5%, then it can charge without, you know, charge reliably.
Yeah. And it's not that it's not like working the way it's supposed to. It's supposed to wirelessly charge even if the case is like, that's the idea, is that you've used up 160% of your battery and then you still get wireless charging.
I will say though, Zach, if you are struggling, if you think it's a matter of alignment and positioning on the mat,
I just need more coils.
Then there may be a product for you. Mm-hmm. There could be a mat that just charges wherever you put it.
You just put it anywhere in the mat, and there's enough coils to compensate for misalignment. Yeah.
That's why Apple hasn't noticed this problem when they released the smart battery cases, because that's what they've been testing it on, clearly.
They just tested all their power, which it works.
Their power is real.
I did try charging it just out of curiosity. Like, what is an iPhone with almost 0% battery and then the dead battery case, how long would it take to go from that to both being 100% and then like get out the door and go? And I tested it with like the best case scenario with the 18 watt charger. So lightning, USB-C to lightning over 18 watts, the one that comes with the iPad Pro or that you can buy on its own now. And I was really impressed to go from 3% iPhone battery, 0% case battery to 100% on both. Took exactly 2 hours. And I was expecting like 3 hours, 3.5, maybe more if it was really, you know, that much more battery to charge. But yeah, it's 2 hours to go to full from like almost zero. And so I was happy with that, because that means that, you know, if I know I'm going to go out the door for the weekend and just have the iPhone for some reason, or just like want to top off before I go for, you know, several hours, then if I've got, any amount of battery in the case or phone under 2 hours will get me charged. So, it just felt faster than I might would have thought. So, overall, the only thing about it is like, I, like you, for everyday use, I probably don't need it. It's just the challenge of like, when I do need it, will I take it, have it with me? Like if I'm out of the house, for travel or something like that, you know? And so.
Yeah. Like I'm going to a wedding in May, and that involves traveling, obviously, and we're staying over and stuff, and I'll definitely swap my leather case for the battery case then, for instance. And I'm sitting pretty, because now I've got a case and technically didn't pay for it. So I'm, when you don't have to pay for something, any convenience is very much appreciated.
Yeah, but I guess where I land here is that you know, I still don't like third party battery cases that are like clunkier, and you've got to manage charging
for
them
too.
Like it's just not worth it, you know. But if you're keeping the phone for, you know, what normal people have, like do, and you don't mind the added bulk, like of a case in general, then, you know, I think it's for $129, it's not cheap, but it's also pretty good.
If you need a battery case, then this is the one you should buy. Like, I don't have any qualifications about that. Nothing. Even though it's technically not the most capable, it's technically not the most powerful in terms of the battery, the convenience and the integration, and you just put it in and you forget about it. Like, it makes it the best choice without a you know, yeah. without an asterisk.
And it doesn't have the problem of the iPhone XR clear case. The buttons on that are terrible. Like they're just like really hard to push. They'll get like they're very resistant to clicks. And this is like, that's one of the things that's so nice about the iPhone case is that the buttons are just like really refined now. They used to be kind of terrible too, but now they're really good. And even just like a small detail on the white smart battery case, the buttons are gray instead of white. So it's kind of got a two-tone effect, which is kind of neat, but, it's just a quality case in general. You know, we'll see how it holds up over time. The only thing you miss out on with the battery version is the closed cutout on the bottom. So like in general, it's not that hard. You know, it's not a big problem, but like the only thing is reachability is really pretty, pretty bad where you've got to swipe down. And there's like not really a room to swipe on. You can do it. It's just not as nice as that open bottom iPhone.
Do you still use reachability on the 5.8 inch?
Right? Yeah, yeah, I do. Yeah, it's well, and it's maybe because of the battery case because it's like the thickness on it makes everything just a little bit positioned otherwise. And,
sure,
you know, but it's still doing like even with the 5.8 inch phone, I'm still doing like hand gymnastics to reach corners and. You know, occasionally. So.
Yeah, I think my hands must just be a bit bigger than yours. Cause,
you're taller than me, too. So
yeah, so. Which, because yeah. for me, I can, like, reach most of the 5.8 inch pretty comfortably, and I turn reachability off because it annoys me. And I actually think that's a thing where people don't know what it is, and then they activate it, and they think, like, it's a iOS glitch where, like, half the screen's cut off.
Yeah.
I think normal people just think it's bugged out, and they, like, restart their phone. They don't realize what they've done. But the fact that you need to like use reachability on the 5.8 inch phone just makes it even more ridiculous that you even got the XS Max in the first place.
Well, my thinking, if you roll the tape back, is that I've got to use reachability now. So, you know, if this phone's not as small as it might need to be, then what's the point? And then what's
here's
the harm?
Here's the real,
an even bigger phone.
Yeah, here's the real thing with that is the XS Max does not use the screen space in a way that makes it worth the additional
right,
size.
Right. Yeah, like, that was my you know, months long review of it is that, well, over time, once the wow, this is big effect weighs up, you know, wears off, it's just like, this is big for what reason? Besides like accessibility, you don't fit more things on screen.
Yeah. I guarantee even if all they had extra was like picture in picture on the XS Max, you would have not changed away from it. Like you only need like a couple of things that are better for it to justify itself. Like mm-hmm. you don't need the entire iOS to be completely different on 6.5 versus 5.8, but you know, stuff like picture in picture video,
yeah,
it would change the equation.
Small things
so
that
much
add up,
and
right.
Yeah, and obviously Apple wants to in the best of worlds promote the biggest phone as the best phone because that's the one they make the most money on. So I definitely think like at least picture in picture is coming down the pipe. It's just, you know, a matter of when. And iOS 13 is the oracle, and clearly it fixes every problem in the world. So we know, look for it in June. Then you can trade back up again. Then you can go back to the Max.
Yeah, no, I'm kind of burned on that now. But
sure.
Yeah, so smart battery case, I do endorse. I've had that. Part of this whole thing was like I've had it in the notes to mention as a segment for a while, like because I've had it for a few weeks now. And in the back of my mind, I've been thinking like, oh, am I going to stop using it and then it won't be a segment anymore because like it'll wear off? But no, it's still with me. And even this weekend, I had a positive experience with just the case, and I like it. And I think everyone wants more battery life, so you know, if you like the look of it, okay enough, and you know the price is for you, then I recommend it. Mia, I want to talk about something different now that's from you, which is an app that you made and released. And we don't often talk about your apps, but this one I definitely want to discuss because its origin is kind of like this podcast in some ways. So tell me about your new Mac app and the experience with making Mac apps for the first time.
Yeah, this is a bit of a roller coaster. We've been through this many times on the show. I hate the Marzipan situation. I don't think it's going to be better. I think the improvements that will come will be very marginal. And I'm a big proponent of, you know, the native Mac-like interface. And I think the way that people are going to do that is not through porting iPad apps. And obviously, I am an iOS developer. And I have done, until the start of this year, zero actual Mac development. So I was kind of talking about AppKit and its benefits. You know, I had a rough idea of what was going on, but nothing concrete, right? Like, I wouldn't want to, like, double down on anything particularly because I just didn't know it. And kind of a sidebar to that, we have this, or we did have this extension that I kind of like hacked together, which would help us make the show notes for this podcast. And essentially, you would have a window of Safari tabs, and you'd press this button, and it would make a new page of a bare HTML list, just a bulleted list of all the links that are open in the tabs with the titles of the articles. And then what we do is just copy and paste that into the show notes, and there's the links for the show. And
yeah, I think the origin is like, we're doing show prep, and I've got my browser full of tabs, and I say something to you like, I wish Apple would make it where you could share this as a list. And you're like, I think I can put that together. And for like well over a year, I think we relied on just your version of that until what, the Mac OS update broke it or something.
Yeah, like what happened was is that Safari now has deprecated the kind of like JavaScript but raw Safari extensions. This was a story like a year ago, because like you can't even make a Safari extension now without having a developer license. So you actually have to pay like $100 a year just to do it, because part of the security things, Apple doesn't allow unsigned extensions anymore, really. So they want you to migrate to what are called Safari app extensions, which are largely the same thing, except they're bundled as a native app and they're sold through the Mac App Store. Mm-hmm. Or you can release them, you know, with like developer ID on the website, but they still need to be signed. So people have to pay for it. Obviously, the money isn't a problem, because I already pay for the developer program for my iOS work. But the fact was, this extension was breaking and not supported, and it wasn't the greatest. Like, obviously, nobody else saw it, but it wasn't ready for public consumption, right? It was very bare bones and pretty rubbish, but it worked for us. So anyway, January comes around. I have a free time in my schedule to do something else. I didn't have any like projects going on right then, so I was like, you know what, I'll do an update. I just finished the iPad update for Daily Dictionary, and I was kind of like waiting for the App Store to process it, because if you're not a developer, you won't know the pains of having something finished and then submitting it and then waiting countless hours just for App Store Connect to do anything and then finally actually process your build so you can actually send it to people. So in that time, I like, I've been talking about AppKit so much, let's try and do something with it. So I like booted into AppKit and I was like messing around. And then I kind of didn't know what I was doing, and I was just kind of like, you know, goofing about. And then I thought, and I made the link. I was like, right, I need to bring this tabs to links thing forward, because it's not working. And it was used for us. And so I thought what I was going to do is make a really bad Mac app that we would just use again, right, and just replace the old extension.
Right.
And I got into it, and quicker than I thought it would take, I got to a point where I was like, wow, this is actually decent. And so then I was like, I gave it to Zach, and you were like, this is cool. And I added like a few new features in with the trimming titles thing, so it can automatically work out the end of the titles and strip them when you share the link. So it kind of removes.
Yeah, our tabs will have -9 to 5 Mac at the end of each title in the tab. And so in the show notes, it was nice to take all the tabs and put them into a list, but then it was more work to remove all the -95 Macs because it was the same source. And
yeah, and on the extension that we, you know, the private one, the crappy one, I just like brute hand coded, if it ends in -95 Mac, remove that. But obviously, yeah, that doesn't scale to any website on the internet.
Right.
So what I did was essentially have this little algorithm that looks for repeated text at the end of the titles, and if it finds enough of them, it just, you can with one button.
So if it's Wikipedia, then it intelligently says, oh, that's there, it's redundant, so remove that as, yep, an option. Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah, and that is one of the things. And so that's what we had. I had sharing and I had trimming titles in roughly the interface that the app shipped with, and I was like, wow, this is actually good enough to release. And so then that gave me the motivation to work on it a bit longer, and now you have it in the App Store. Mm-hmm. And I just think it's really cool. Like, I went from knowing no AppKit at all to having a semi-decent understanding of what's going on. So now I can go even more detailed on the Marzipan battle, because it's kind of stupid to do like a whole AppKit project 3 months before WWDC when they might, you know, announce who knows what, and it could even break tomorrow. But
this isn't an app that you could make for iOS, because there aren't Safari extensions on iOS. So it isn't like you could make it for the iPhone and iPad and then use that code on the Mac. And Marzipan isn't Mac to iOS. It's kind of iOS to Mac. So because it's in this camp of like a Mac-only utility, it's kind of okay, I think, even with the changes coming.
Yeah, and I hopefully believe that people actually find it useful. So
yeah, I mean, it's been neat just seeing like something that was, you know, requested to you by necessity. Like, wow, this is you know, these 15 links, moving them over is more work than it needs to be on a computer. you think it'd be able to work for you.
Yeah, like you think it's one of those things that, oh, you just need to look in the edit menu of Safari and it'll be one of those things with a, you know, unscrupulous 5-item keyboard shortcut and, you know, copy your links. But it just isn't a thing. And it's like, well,
yeah,
and seems like a gap in the market or something.
Yeah, to see that go from kind of a need to you developing the Mac app as your first Mac app and getting experience with that process, even going like from the, you know, pre-release versions, each one having a different fix for something is neat. So if that's something that you might need, I recommend checking it out. But just also, it's neat that it's been like this idea has been in behind the podcast for like, I'd say well over a year now.
It was definitely
a long time ago when it broke before the new thing. So,
yeah. And just to relate this to news, in the next version of macOS 10.4, 10.4.4, currently in beta, Apple actually supports some new APIs, which allow me, because at the moment, Tabs to Links is a standalone app, because that was kind of the compromise, is it can't be a Safari extension anymore. I've got to make it a standalone app. Mm-hmm. Of course, sod's law. Literally, as soon as I finish it, they announced Safari 12.1 beta, which adds the APIs I've been waiting for ages to actually make it as an extension. So whenever 10.4.4 comes out, probably at the end of the month, about then, I'm releasing an update that will allow you to access Tabs to Links from the menu, from the toolbar in Safari again. So you can export the links of the current window without having to open the separate application.
Like, which is really cool. How it started out. It's like a button on Safari that you can just click without having to go to a separate app, which is even better. I think that the Mac app on the dock is like still going to be nice. And it's cool that it worked with dark mode, and you know, that's how I use it. And it's like using it like with Command C to copy the shortcuts and having the option of like plain text and markdown. It's come a long way, and I think the next version that you're doing has check marks for like unselecting links in the list. The Mac app like window will still have utility, but it's even further like back to its roots as a Safari extension. It's like one button you click within the window. In this case,
as you can might imagine, the Safari extension like sandbox is pretty severe, so there's limitations on what you can offer there. So not every feature will be in the extension, but you know, the core stuff is there, like copy.
Yeah, I think that's
clipboard, copy
is
markdown.
Yeah.
And Markdown's one of those things that's really funny because, like, me and you don't really use Markdown at all. So, and the genesis of the app is, you know, what we needed. And so I shipped it, immediately I got, like, so many people like, you need Markdown. I was like, oh, I guess it's that obvious. And it, you know, implementing the feature took like 10 minutes, but it was like, and now it's like a million times more useful for the wider public.
This week, 9to5 Mac Happy Hour is sponsored by LinkedIn Jobs. When it's time to make a hire for your small business, naturally, you want to find the best person for the job. Odds are that person is on LinkedIn. LinkedIn Jobs makes it easy to get matched with quality candidates who make the most sense for your role. LinkedIn Jobs uses knowledge of both hard skills and soft skills to match you with the people who fit your role the best. People come to LinkedIn every day to learn and advance their careers. So LinkedIn understands what they're interested in and looking for, which means when you use LinkedIn Jobs to hire someone, your matches are based on so much more than a resume. Your LinkedIn Jobs matches are based on skills and backgrounds, sure, but also interests, activities, and passions. Matching lets you quickly get a group of the most relevant, qualified candidates for your role. That way, you can focus on the candidates you want to spend time talking to and make a quality hire you're excited about. Customers rate LinkedIn Jobs number one in delivering quality hires. Post a job today at linkedin.com/happyhour and get $50 off your first job post. That's linkedin.com/happyhour. Our thanks to LinkedIn Jobs for sponsoring 9to5 Mac Happy Hour. All right, Mayo, next up this week, we'll get into the news, is a report from the New York Post about kind of the behind the scenes of Apple's video content service coming to works, and kind of some anecdotes from what's been going on with on the production sets and how Tim Cook's been involved. So tell me about that.
Yeah, and we've heard like a couple of, you know, waves of these kind of stories. Obviously back in when Carpool Karaoke was coming out, there was that story about Tim Cook like censoring episodes because of references to like sex and swearing and stuff, and we covered that at the time where it's like, you know, family friendly, he even cut like entire episodes, and that, if you remember, Carpool Karaoke, the launch was actually delayed, like it was supposed to come out in like March or February, mm-hmm. and then it got pushed back, you know, to like May. Yeah. The Carpool Karaoke era is like only like 2 years ago, but it feels like a lifetime ago. It's crazy. And then they obviously hired Amberg and Ehrlich from Sony to head up their original content division a year later. And at that point, it was like, well, hopefully, you know, the whims of Tim Cook's personal preferences are not going to be controlling the project anymore. They have people to run this. I think it's pretty clear by the trends of TV overall that, you know, gripping dramas and the top-rated shows on television tend to have, you know, a feature vulgar language and nudity and stuff like that. Mm. And yes, there are plenty of shows that you can do that are compelling that don't have that, but I think not having that at all is going to be a mistake. And it kind of sounds like that's what's happening. There's kind of been a back and forth in the news cycle over the last, like, 10 months about how accepting Apple is of, you know, adult-themed content or adult themes being part of the shows. And we heard one last year that was kind of, it sounded like they were being a bit more open, that they called it that Apple didn't want gratuitous violence and nudity, right, but they were happy to accept, you know, grittier, gnarlier stories.
Yeah, I think, I mean, the early reporting was that Apple wanted, with their hires from Sony, the next Breaking Bad, like they wanted to hit
Game
like
of Thrones,
that.
Yeah,
Game of Thrones, Breaking Bad, like those are shows with violence and swearing and nudity and drug references in terms of Breaking Bad, like the plot line. So it's been a kind of a weird mixed message from the start, and you know, I guess that's also echoed like in the newest report this week.
Yeah, this one's definitely on the Apple's cracking down on anything that isn't family friendly side of the debate. It basically calls executives being intrusive, specifically Tim Cook, and it kind of says that there's been delays in production because the Apple executives can't decide exactly what they want, so there's had to be rewrites and they've changed producers, and they keep getting quote-unquote notes from Apple executives plotting the course of their stories. Mm-hmm. And one of the quotes is, Tim Cook is giving notes and getting involved. One of the CEO's most repeated notes is, don't be so mean. Which is, it's hard, right? Because this is obviously written and sourced by somebody who's disgruntled and upset with the practice. Maybe it's a, you know, a producer who doesn't want to be left to their own and has their faithful story, and they get upset when it needs to be tweaked. And, you know, TV show networks have alterations and changes for every single show on the platform. But the kind of nature of it is, are those changes about, you know, adoption and mainstream reception? Or are they about, you know, Tim Cook doesn't like sex, so we're not going to show it at all? Like, and it's hard. The article kind of like paints Tim Cook, apparently he's been on set of some of the shows that are in development, and it kind of shows that in the bad light, like they shouldn't be getting involved at all. I don't really agree with that per se, because it's kind of like how people always say that a company led by a dictator is always bad, but really it's like, if the dictator has good taste and makes good decisions, then it's going to result in good results. See most of the Steve Jobs era. Hmm. And then, but if they're not, then they can, you know, lead it down a rabbit hole and it gets overwhelmed. Clearly, Apple knew what it was doing, right? Like, they hire the Sony guys to run this thing. And I hope that they haven't, like, backtracked and are now telling the Sony people to limit the ambition.
Right.
Because, you know, I'm not like, a big fan of swearing and stuff like that, but it's clearly a critical plot point of many, many top shows, including plenty of top shows that I love and enjoy, even though I don't really swear myself. Like, you know, Breaking Bad is like my favorite show ever.
Yeah, not that it's part of the plot, but that it kind of fits the it paints the picture of like how realistic is this experience that they're depicting.
Yeah, and Breaking Bad is actually a good example that doesn't have that much swearing because it was shown on
whatever
it was shown on. Yeah, that it was shown on like TV, so they have like TV has
the allotment of swear words. Yeah.
Yeah, you can say like, you know, 3 swear words per season or something. You know, they have specific
advertisers don't want to be next to a swear word, I think, in the commercial break kind of stuff.
Like yeah, there's very strict rules and stuff like that. But obviously Breaking Bad is very heavy on violence and that kind of, you know, darkness. And if the Apple executive team are being overprotectionist of like the all-encompassing family-friendly Apple brand, and it's going to preclude, you know, shows and narratives like Breaking Bad from happening at all, I think that's a bad thing. And obviously the New York Post story definitely intimates that that is what's happening.
Yeah, when the actual service comes out, and if it seems like there'll be waves of shows launching even when the service is out, because there's just been like every few weeks or so, like a story about Apple signing another TV show. Like even today, there was one. And we're just a few weeks away from the service being announced, at least. So you can imagine that there'd be like a dozen shows at the launch and then like many more on a rolling basis. So maybe like when the service launches, all these stories would be like, what were they talking about? You know, this is a very normal service that in terms of the content, it's HBO like, or it's Netflix like, or whatever. But a couple of things like in that other companies have done, like Disney would have its whole, I think Touchstone was the arm of like, if it's PG-13 through R, it's Touchstone. And if it's, you know, family friendly, it's Disney. And I think over time, like that approach has just kind of gone away. And like what makes a movie PG-13 versus PG versus G is definitely loosened up over the years. Like I remember years ago, you would never have the F word in a PG-13 movie. And now it's like you get one or two per PG-13 movie, which is like, you know, just from like the 90s standards, kind of insane. So I think that like, you know, one possibility would be Apple has their big service, and then they have like another branded service, almost like how there's Apple and Beats of video, and like the edgier stuff is something else, but it's still their revenue stream. That would be weird though, like as launching a new service, I don't think you'd go from day one that way. And you know, HBO has family friendly content. I think they had like Dills with Sesame Street, for example. But then like they also have edgy stuff and just they have a range. Like network television, it because of the audience, like how it's broadcast, it has to be family friendly, for the most part. And you don't get those swear words like cable. You kind of ramp up to it. So Apple can be anything, but what I think would make sense is they have like the flagship shows that are, you know, they look at the iTunes store. You've got everything G through R. And you've got controls in the technology, parental controls that you can limit access to what you see in the store and what you can play on your device. And the service, I would think would be fine that way. Like if you want to advertise Apple Video to families, then use those shows to, you know, promote it. And if you want to advertise it to people that you think, you know, are more like the HBO customers, then focus on those shows. But the service itself can have everything. And then intelligently use your parental controls to show what you even, you know, let people see. Like never let people see, you know, what's out of their scope, what should be out of their scope based on like parental controls, for example. It's tricky though. Like if you want to protect the brand for adults, like you don't want Apple to be associated with, you know, this edgier stuff. You think it might touch the brand in a bad way, then. You know, that doesn't really scale to that.
Is that really different, though, from selling, you know, the R-rated movies in the iTunes store?
Right, yeah.
I mean, explicit podcasts in the podcast directory.
Even though they're not the ones, like, producing it, you know, or paying for it, then they're still selling it to you. Like, the closest thing to all of this is there's two things. One is the whole Vital Signs story that Dr. Dre was going to have. This is when, you know, we had Planet of the Apps and we had Carpool Karaoke, and, like, Apple was going to do, like, they were just testing, you know, video. And one of the ideas was to give Dr. Dre a TV show called Vital Signs. This was reported by Recode in detail. And it was going to be like semi-biography, but fictional. And it was going to be like, you know, a weekly TV show, probably put out all at once, but, you know, episodical. And it was quite graphic, like what was described. And it didn't fit this at all. And you can see that one being shut down. It's like, we don't like that. But then you can also look at, like, shortly after Apple acquired Beats Electronics for the streaming music service and the headphones and speaker business, they closely aligned Beats One, the streaming station, and Apple Music, the brand, with Straight Outta Compton, the movie. And, like, they promoted that pretty heavily, like, through, you know, Apple Music, through iTunes, et cetera. And they kind of made the connection of, like, this is Dr. Dre's movie, and he's, like, we just bought his company. You know, so that worked out okay, I guess. It was a little bit different, but it worked out. So, I mean, we'll see how it goes. Part of me thinks, like, maybe we'll just look at this and, like, what actually ships won't be reflective of, like, some of these stories, that it was just, like, complaints, and that they worked it out in the end. But we'll definitely know, you know, from the preview, probably, of, like, what the content looks like. And then when it actually ships, we can judge it, too. It's like, you know, is this... Did they miss out on opportunities to have, like, better content because they went on this path of, like, 12 of the same shows repeated, or you know, or is it kind of what they described early on, and then there actually is kind of a mix of content for different
Yeah, audiences. I mean, that's a good point. Like, it could just – they could be happy with a quota of, you know, adult-focused shows and then a quota of family-friendly shows, and potentially the people that are getting told they need to, you know, tone it down a bit – could be in the quota of ones they decided that are meant, you know, to be targeted at everyone. Like, maybe it could be that they've sent off, you know, 20 shows or whatever, and 15 of them are suddenly, you know, adult only, and they feature profanity and nudity and everything else. And that's probably isn't the balance they want, right? So it could just be they have a quota of how many roughly shows they want to target at adult markets, and that currently they've got too many, so they're having to tell people to kind of change it up a little bit, yeah. Which is bad in the sense that they've, you know, got to this point and then you just make changes, but
yeah, and
that's different to
some...
that, but that's different to, like, censoring the adult stuff full stop.
Yeah. And there have been, like, earlier reports of like one or two instances of, like, producer changes or director changes, like who's involved in the project because of Apple, but not very many. And for the most part, it seems like if Apple buys the project, then, like, what you, that they should know what they're in for when they pay for it. And that there shouldn't be so much there shouldn't be so many stories of, like, now that we own it and you're making it for us, we don't like it and change it. Because at a certain point you just say, well, I'm not going to make it anymore. And it does seem a little bit unfair that now we've got, like, repeats of these stories without seeing anything on Apple's side of, like, what are they actually doing? What are they making? But luckily this time we're closer to at least a preview, if not the launch. So,
One of the funny lines is that, Apple does not allow for the shows to depict negative consequences of technology.
Yeah, like, you know, you just, I maybe, like, Black Mirror, like, the whole idea there is that it makes you a little bit creeped out about technology in general. Like, it's horror around technology in many ways. I wonder if that's part of it, or, like, if they wouldn't have a negative plot about, like, self-driving cars because they're, like, protective of that idea right now. It's a funny thing, but... You know, I wish there were more specifics of, like, what actually was going on.
that kind of thing, though, I don't, like, mind as much. Like, I fully expect that all of these shows will only feature, like, people using iPhones. I just think that's what's going to happen. It's, like, the most...
Well, that already happens on TV.
Like, yeah, it's like product placement, right?
At least,
but,
yeah.
But, like, under the Apple umbrella, it'd be really weird if you have, like, core cast members walking around with, like, Samsung phones. It would just be strange. And this is just kind of on that vein, like, they don't want to produce content that essentially tells you that, you know, the iPhone you're using to watch this is bad for you. So that kind of stuff I can agree with more. Like, it makes sense to me that they don't want that. Like, the separation of family-friendly and adult stuff is the stuff that I can't, you know, justify. Because you can have parental controls and you can have toggles and you can have those limitations that, you know, that make those distinctions. The other one bit I want to highlight from this piece is that it says... that people are irritated because they keep moving the service launch back, leading to delays. It says that the video executives are having to be called back to the Apple Park headquarters on a regular basis to approve changes to the technology stack when they really should be, you know, working on the shows in like Los Angeles. That's interesting to me because, you know, what is there about this technology stack that is so significant? Like, surely it's just, you know, you press a video and it plays. Like, what tech change are they doing? Is there something to this whole service that we haven't, you know, seen yet or know? Or is this just, you know, admin and bureaucracy?
Yeah, that's a weird one. I mean, you would think that the video content is what it is, and that however it's distributed, you know, is up to Apple. And, you know, who cares if it's given away for free to iPhone users or as a paid service, you know, or mailed out on DVDs? Like, as long as it's distributed, and as long as it's going to reach, I guess maybe that's it, is that as long as it's going to reach, then you're happy. But maybe there are some agreements to, like, you know, you wouldn't want this sent out on DVD because no one would watch it. And so it's not that extreme, but it's some version of that, you know, if there are changes, maybe it's contractual.
Yeah. Or I was thinking, like, maybe there's weird features that are kind of non-standard. Like, it's not just a plain film, kind of like how they did, you know, they did the iTunes extra stuff for iTunes movies, and Amazon has like,
X-ray.
I'm blanking on the name of it. What's their thing for like radar, where you can like see the characters that are on the screen right now when you like
X-ray,
click on it?
I think.
X-ray, there, yeah, not radar, X-ray. Like, maybe there's an Apple version of that, because I keep thinking back to the Tim Cook quote where he's like, when I watch TV, you know, it's like being transported to the 70s. Nothing's changed. And even this isn't like live TV, I still think there maybe is the scope for them to have, you know, some of like Easter eggs in the basket that are, no, in a, like, everyone kind of thinks of this as just a run-of-the-mill, you know, it'll be like Apple Music, where here's some video and here you go, you pay for it.
Yeah.
It'd be kind of cool if they have some, like, secret things up their sleeve to, like, modernize the experience. And stuff like X-ray or like, counter, like, complementary things that you can do on, like, the iPad while the film's going on, potentially. Right. Like, stuff like that kind of falls into the realm of technology changes that might need to be reapproved. And if they do have some of that stuff in the offing, it'd be cool to see.
Yeah, I hadn't considered that though. But the anything that overlays onto the actual video is like disruptive, I think, for like the viewing experience. But if the iPhone detects, you know, with iOS 12.2, the iPhone's pretty aggressive about like putting your now playing tile as what's on your TV, so that you can control playback, especially on like an AirPlay 2 TV. The new ones are coming, but it works too with Apple TV, so you can like pause the video, skip around. If it also, an element of that was like tap through to see like an IMDb equivalent, would be kind of neat. But yeah, I hadn't thought about that kind of stuff. We'll see.
Because one thing I have heard like on the grapevine is most of like Eddie Q's engineers are working on doing this TV thing since the last few months. Like,
yeah,
it seems like
it's been nothing else in the media space. Like, you know, the Apple Music app is what it is right now. It hasn't changed in a long time. And same for Apple TV itself.
Yeah, but if it would not, I again, it's hard because, you know, we're doing this through like five layers of indirection of people talking to people. But I think there's going to be more to see than here's the TV app plus some new data sources of Apple shows. I think there's going to be something special about it that we don't know what it is yet.
Yeah, hopefully. I wonder how much work is involved in doing the Amazon Channels equivalent too, which is also part of the story of Apple letting you subscribe to HBO or other services through the TV app, and then hopefully have it play in the TV app, not just jump to HBO's app.
Yeah, and tech changes could be like how do they present all those things next to each other? Do they elevate Apple's originals over, you know, the Amazon stuff or the HBO stuff? And, you know, is there a queue? Kind of like, I think it's, I don't think the TV app that we see today is just going to be filled with, you know, five more sources of new content video. Like, I think there's going to be not a whole new app, but there's going to be changes that we'll see and hopefully get demoed at the event.
This week, 9to5 Mac Happy Hour is sponsored by Capterra. So here's the thing. It's 2019, but you're probably still doing things the old way at work, right? New year, new you. So start the year off right by replacing that clunky old software that you know causes you angst and agony. Instead, you can find software you love that fits your business's need using Capterra.com. Capterra is the leading free online resource to help you find the best software solutions for your business. Again, totally free. And with over 700,000 reviews of products from real software users, you can discover everything you need to make an informed decision. Simply search more than 700 specific categories of software, everything from project management to email marketing to yoga studio management software. No matter what kind of software your business needs, Capterra makes it easy to discover the right solution and fast. And since Capterra is totally free to browse, you can be empowered to make the best decision for your business without needing to ask your boss for a penny. No need to feel like you don't know where to start. Instead, you can be the expert on what software is best. Join the millions of people who use Capterra each month to find the best and right tools for your business. Visit Capterra.com/happy hour for free today to find the right tools to make 2019 the year for your business. Capterra.com/happy hour. Capterra. That's CAPTERRA.com/happy hour. Our thanks to Capterra for sponsoring 9 to 5 Mac Happy Hour. All right, let's talk about iOS 12.2 Beta 4. So this is the fourth developer release, and there's also a public beta version of iOS 12.2 and the associated updates. The fact that I think the public beta came out on the same day as the developer version says it's coming soon, plus beta 4 coming soon. You can probably expect, like, we haven't had the Apple event announced yet for March 25th, the one that was reported first by BuzzFeed, but that seems like a lock. We'll just have the announcement sometime soon. And that this software will be shown then, because it's the service is run on iOS 12.2, and that it's then released maybe that day or, you know, soon after. So the new beta version, there are a few changes, but they point to the same things that we've been seeing. So the Apple News icon app got a brand new icon, and it's different on the Mac and on iOS. So,
and the watch.
And the watch even. So that's something that's changed, like, almost with every iOS version, dating back to, like, Newsstand even, where it used to be the folder of magazine apps and newspaper apps that you could see within the folder, like it was like a wood shelf instead of like the gray felt metal folder. Well, then they had iOS 7 and it was just a folder. It was just an icon that opened up like an iBook shelf style app. And then Newsstand went away entirely. And then we got Apple News. And Apple News, like, I think it's always had a pretty good icon. Like, it was a stylized newspaper and a red box, like, you know, background. It was okay. And then over in a later version, they changed it like a little bit more refined. So it was like, you know, I don't know, more focused, I guess. And then both versions were acceptable. The new one is primarily a white icon with a highly stylized letter N from Apple News, which was only part of the newspaper style of the old icons. And now it's like the brand. And on the Mac, they've got at least a red circle, but then it's a white background, a little bit of a gray gradient to it. And then again, a red N. And it's not just like an N style, like an N. It's like super stylized where it's almost non-recognizable. And I think that might be the problem for this icon for a lot of people, including me, is that if you didn't know the timeline of like the original icon, like how it's changed, it's like morphed into something more, you know, just abstract to now it is an N, but only if you know that.
Yeah, because the old N wasn't even like, it's not just like a blown up version of the old N. They changed it because the old N used to be like hard triangles to do the, you know, in the corners. Whereas now they've put these like weird curves on it. So it's like swoopy. And if you kind of, you had a funny tweet where if you kind of like fill in the missing parts, it would almost look like an S rather than the letter N.
Yeah, yeah. It's someone else saw a Z like sideways and broken. So, you know, back up here, like big picture is that they are changing the app icon because, you know, based on the rumors, the new service is coming in this update. And what gets you to check out an app more than changing the icon on your home screen? Like, oh, what's different there? Oh, it's all this new stuff that you can pay for now. And some people do like it. Like some people like white icons, like based icons, and there are a lot of them. And you and I are in the same camp where we think they just look undesigned and lazy. And like, all you got to do is change the color, like invert it. and so many of these icons, and it will fix the problem. And that's the case here for me too. It's like, I'm not so much opposed to the stylized in. I don't think you are either. It's just, and it is weird. Like, it's an abstraction of the in, but it will have the word news under it. And then it will become recognizable as like a brand image for Apple News. But it's mainly the white background. It just doesn't look good. It looks, unfinished.
So. Yeah. My first sentence was holding back. I hate white icons. They are so, like, lazy in conception and in the final result. Like, whenever I see a white icon, it just feels like such a waste of screen. It's like you have this beautiful Retina display and you have these windows of round rectangles. And one of the things I like the most about, like, the iOS 4, iOS 5, iOS 6 era is that the icons would take advantage of that round rect shape. Like, you'd have the icons kind of appreciate that they're in a rounded rectangle and they'd fill the corners and they'd actually use the shape. Now, in this modern era, you know, it just seems like people just put a glyph in the middle and it doesn't matter what the round rect. It's almost like the round rect isn't there and it's like, oh, we put this glyph in the middle, but we've still got this space. Let's just fill it with a solid color in the background. And every time I see one of these, it's like when you watch a PowerPoint presentation and they've added a piece of clip art that's a JPEG and not a PNG. So rather than just being the clip art, it's got this white border around it. You know, it's just white because it hasn't got the transparency of the images.
Yeah.
And it's so lazy. It's like, and the problem is every icon's going white with like a tiny thing in the middle of it. So they're just all blurring into the same thing. Like
so that you might
the
as
whiteness
well just have,
is just taking over.
Yeah, so that you might as well just have arbitrary shapes, like whatever the shape is, and that's your icon. Make it a little bit larger.
Yeah, very few companies, including now Apple, don't care about the rounded rectangle anymore. They don't even want to take the time to put a gradient on there anymore. It's like, let's just make it white and that's it. And it's like, come on. If you'd have done the white, you know, quote unquote N shape on a red background, it would look so much better. It would feel vibrant and it would pop. Whereas as it is, it's like, you know, cookie cutter. Oh, here we go, move on. We didn't even think about it. And I personally don't think it should be an N or whatever that random shape is at all. They don't have to do a newspaper, but it could be some sort of symbolization, like a logo. Like the Siri icon isn't the letter S, right? It's, you know, the weird globule of, like, brain.
Yes.
And that's kind of what I want all the icons to be. Like, music isn't the letter M, it's a musical note. And that's white background too, and I hate that one as well. But
the worst part about the music icon with white background is that with CarPlay, they've got the now playing tile that you tap on and it goes to whatever source is playing media, whether it's music, podcast, audiobooks, Spotify, whatever. And when they change from, like, the pinkest red icon to the white background, they never changed the tile for CarPlay for now playing, so it just doesn't match anymore when it used to, and it isn't that it got its own color, like it's the old color plus music doesn't match. It bothers me. I fell to radar. It got close. It's like, you know, it is what it is. But
it's like, what is this N? Is it meant to be an N anymore? Is it just meant to be a hexagon and a triangle around it? Like, I don't even know anymore if you're just supposed to see it as disparate shapes. Because, for instance, Apple News in Canada is launching for the first time with iOS 12.2. Those customers don't have the history. They don't have the heritage of what the news icon looked like before. And now this is what it's going to be. And Apple's going to stand on the stage at their March event, and then on a 500-inch projector, they're going to put two yes. triangles and a rectangle and then an expanse of white. It's just so much more, like, immature and basic. And Apple has great designers, but for whatever reason, someone's telling them to, you know, put white backgrounds and then a tiny little shape in the middle, and it just makes me so sad.
It's yeah, like, I know people. There are people that like it, like outside of Apple, like even the. But you could see the response on Twitter after you know we discovered the changes that like people are torn, and there are people that feel strongly on both sides. I think against is like stronger feeling, and people that are like it are like, oh, it's okay, it's fine, it looks fresh, it's different. But I think the same people, like if you went from the white background to the red background, that that'd be fresh and different too. It'd also be better. And the solution here is, you know, iOS supports multiple app icons. So just if you want to keep changing it, and if you want to have a white version, then have Apple's apps make multiple versions, and like all the apps or apps that want to have white backgrounds icons and make multiple versions there too. Like we saw with Slack recently, they changed their icon entirely And I didn't like the old one. I thought the new one was pretty good. And then they changed it because people didn't like the purple to a white background. And it's like, oh, I like the new one, but not with a white background. Now we're back to a bad icon, in my opinion. I love apps like the Reddit app Apollo. It has tons of apps and you can subscribe, or donate, tip and support it even further. And then you get like monthly updates of like other app icons in addition to the ones that it comes with. But it's a pretty new feature in iOS, but they could do it. On the Mac, there's not like an easy way for it, but you can change any app icon, like, you know, manually.
Yeah. And the news icon on the Mac is lazy in a different way because it's just putting the N in a circle.
And... Yeah. Well, the Mac version, like I wouldn't say it's lazy. It's just like the wrong opinion. Like they went with a white background, but if you look really closely, like it looks pretty good when it's like huge.
It does have some texture that the iOS one does.
Yeah. It gradients down from white to gray and it's got like some shadow and like the N is more like third dimensional, you could feel it on there. And this got the red ring around it too. But I don't like the circle apps on the Mac. Like iTunes has done it for a long time, so it gets a pass, but like, you know, I saw somebody tweeted, and there's a million opinions about this, but like somebody replied to me and some of the responses was like, when is Stocks going to get a circle Mac icon? And like my take there is like, no, it's got one of the slanted icons. Like it looks more like a Mac app than it's not a service. So it doesn't need to be a circle. So people have opinions, but at the end of the day, I don't really care because I put news in a folder right now anyway, because I just can't get use out of the app because of Twitter and RSS, like the nature of our jobs. And for things that I don't track, like I tried to use it for tracking musicians and like news about musicians. And I found that I get the same, like I get like all the years worth of stories, but like they're really random. And like, it doesn't favor the source of like the story. It'll like show you, you know, coverage of the story instead. And, something's not right there about the algorithm. You know, I think it's a little bit too automatic for what I was wanting to use it for. And maybe it'll change when it's a subscription service that gives you content that you wouldn't see otherwise, but I'm not sure about that. We'll see.
So for me, I care enough that it has gone from the top level of my front page into a folder. And it's just ugly. Like, I'm sorry. And people are like, oh, you're just getting on the bandwagon because Slack did it and it was all trendy when Slack did it last week and everyone hated that. No, I have been complaining about white icon since iOS 7 happened. Like, I have, like, tweets going back. I found a tweet from 2014 where I was complaining about the iOS 7 newsstand icon being a white background app, like, and how lazy that is.
Mm-hmm.
And in many parts of Apple's design, I feel like they kind of had a bit of a wobble with iOS 7, but they got back in track and everything's generally been better. But app icons, they are not doing a good job on. Like, they keep introducing new apps with white backgrounds, like Files was iOS 11. And yeah. Files is almost a round rectangle shape, but no, they just got to put it in the middle and put a white background around it. And now we're seeing it with, like, all their new service apps as they get redesigned, like Wallet. And then, because Wallet, the inside of the app changed to white for no apparent reason.
You know, when the sleep tracking company Bedit that Apple bought, there's used to be an orange app icon with a white B outline. And when they had the new Bedit 3.5 version, they made it a white background with an orange B instead. They're going all out. And sometimes, like, the airport utility app is a white icon, like the blue arrows. It looks like the product. It looks like the box. I think it kind of matches there. Or like the App Store Connect being like the opposite of the App Store icon, like invert white and blue. It kind of works. It's like it's not the consumer one, so it looks like more like a utility. But like for primary apps, yeah, I am not in favor of this trend at all. And it's continuing. Another change in the update is the icon for the Apple TV Remote Tile and Control Center, which used to be optional. You could add it through settings, and then I think in iOS 12 it detected if you have an Apple TV, it puts it there automatically for you.
You can turn it off again though.
Yeah, you can turn it off, but yeah. It's there by default. So
yeah.
And the icon matched the icon for the Apple TV remote app, which is a black icon, with Apple TV and gray on it. And they changed it from the Apple TV, Apple logo, TV text to an outline of the Siri remote in the same style as like the calculator icon in Control Center. Which is, kind of get what they're doing there, because with the iOS 12.2 update, you can use that tile to control Apple TV or HomeKit TVs from LG, Sony, or Vizio that are coming this year. or through software updates for existing TVs in some cases. So they're going from it's just your Apple TV remote to it's your smart TV remote, but then they use the icon for the Apple TV. So it's a little bit mixed message there. Like they could have gone with something more generic. I guess they're just doing like, this is what a remote looks like to us. Just like how they changed the pages icon from like a pencil to the Apple pencil or a pen to the Apple pencil. Using their own product, but it's a little bit mixed message there with it because like the Siri remote icon would work for the Apple TV app just as much, if not more than the Apple TV text icon for it. But, and then they changed the animation there a little bit. So makes a little bit more sense.
It's smoother. Yeah.
Yeah. It's still funny. Have you used it in the beta version? I've seen it
a couple of times.
Yeah. So it's an all black UI, which is great. They're not using an all white UI, which is nice. But the corners of it are like slow to fill. And so on the four corners of the screen, you get a little bit of like what you saw behind there. It's just weird. And also it's in Control Center, but it behaves like an app where you've got to flick the home indicator to close it. And to me, it's like, I don't know. It's a little funny. Like, I'd like to tap out of like a non-button area to close it, dismiss it too. So it's a little bit weird.
I can understand why they do that though, because you're kind of meant to use it without looking down. So if you just had anywhere tapped to dismiss, it would mean that you'd do it accidentally too much while you're actually just trying to watch TV. And they've done it like that so that you know what to do when you're on the lock screen and it puts the indicator there as well. Because that's why it's different to other Control Center stuff, is that if you have it there and you lock your phone and you unlock, it'll put the remote back there for convenience, whereas all the other Control Center stuff is just like these transient tiles that pop open and then go back down again when you close Control Center.
Yeah, it's still weird design. Like it doesn't fit what Control Center is versus what an app is, but it's at least persistent. So that's nice. Any other changes in iOS 12.2 that you want to mention? I think those were the main things that we saw.
Yeah, I think that was the big stuff. Okay. It's so sad because now we're at beta 4 and then the icon, it's too late for the icon to change. Like, yeah. If the news icon had changed in beta 1, there would have been time for them to iterate on it and change it. But I feel like now we're going to have one more beta and that'll be it. And
this is like when the App Store icon changed from...
It is very much like when the App Store icon changed.
All right, Mayo, a few more things this week to wrap up, starting with Siri. So you're in the UK, and there were reports a few weeks ago that the British male Siri voice had changed, and you weren't so sure. But this week you heard a new voice of Siri for the female version, for sure, right?
Guaranteed, and we confirmed it with sources. Apple has upgraded the female and British voices, rolling out seemingly in a staggered fashion, but it was like Wednesday or Tuesday, and I woke up, asked Siri a question on my HomePod, and then boom, she sounded different. And I was like, ooh, here we go. And so then you do the barrage of like questions just to check it's not like a placebo where you're trying to think of stuff that isn't there. But it's definitely, it sounds noticeably different. It's hard to describe like what the improvement is. In iOS 11, for the US, they changed the female voice for Siri to a new like machine learning driven thing. And they even said, they announced it on stage and said that they'd hired new voice talent to record the, you know, bass sounds and pronunciations. For this, it doesn't seem like they've got a new voice talent to record it. It just feels like they're using those sounds to do better synthesis, probably using the same kind of machine learning techniques, because the way it speaks, it just has kind of better intonation and it's slightly like sharper accent. And I think it sounds much better. So I'm very happy.
Yeah. And you've been waiting for a better female Siri voice in the UK for a long time, like since the US.
Since the US changed, yeah.
Yeah. Did the male version never catch up? Like, I don't know what that did. I think the male version has been the same since it's been the male version in the US.
I believe there has been no changes to the male version.
Yeah, that's the one that I use. And what's the default in the UK?
The default in the UK is male, whereas the default in the US is female.
Yeah, so maybe the male version has gotten sharper. I just haven't picked up on it. But because if you're having improvements to the non-default in the UK, you'd think that the non-default in the US would also have improved. So maybe. That's good. It's John G. and Andrea at work, obviously. In the UK, at least. It's always bothered me when, like, you see all the stories about Susan Bennett, the original Siri voice for, like, the iPhone 4S. And she'll take all the, you know, press.
Publicity.
Press coverage she can get to say, like, I am the Siri voice, but she is not the Siri voice, unless you're running an old version of iOS.
Yeah, and even before iOS 11, the voice before that was not Susan Bennett either.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I'm sure usually like they you don't want the name to come out, like at least in that. All right, and then also there's an update to the macOS Keychain bug report story. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so we covered this a couple of weeks ago. The guy, Linus Hens, had found this Keychain exploit which revealed passwords that were supposed to be locked down in macOS. He wanted to get paid for his work and was complaining that there was no bug bounty, so he was doing a video demonstration but not releasing the fix with Apple because he was trying to apply pressure to make them change their mind and, you know, pay out for macOS bounties. What has happened in the meantime is Apple apparently reached out to him, politely asked him to share how the bug to share the exploit with them. He said he would if they would release a statement saying why there is not a macOS bug bounty program. Apple refused to do that. And now Hens has decided to share the details of the bug with Apple, despite there being no progress on the macOS bug bounty thing to protect users, because obviously he believes it's a pretty serious exploit. So essentially, his protest didn't work. We're still facing the big bureaucracy of Apple Incorporated to formally announce a macOS bug bounty program, which I believe will eventually happen, and it's just kind of sloppy of them not to have it.
Yeah,
maybe they'll do it at WWDC, maybe.
Yeah, I would say his effort wasn't in vain. Like, it at least got a lot of publicity, and it had to drive conversations with an Apple about why it isn't their program. And they were already like focused on making changes because of the FaceTime bug and that whole incident, and the bounty was a part of that too. So I would imagine that he definitely had an influence on the Mac, because you could see them focusing on how they handle iOS bug reports as being like what their lesson learned this year. But because of this, he got the Mac a little bit of attention, maybe. So you could guess that if there is a program in the works, that it might be rushed, you know.
Accelerated, yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah. Not rushed, but accelerated. That's a good way.
I do think it's a bit cheeky of them to like send him an email and just completely ignore his like premise at all, but that's Apple Incorporated.
All right, and also this week we had the annual Apple shareholders meeting in Cupertino, where shareholders get invited. I think it's kind of random, right? That if you're a shareholder, then you get invited at random to come attend.
You have to have at least $2,000 of Apple stock, and then you basically just apply, and it's first come, first serve. And inevitably, they're always oversubscribed because you can't fit. There are a lot of Apple shareholders with more than $2,000 in stock who were having a nice trip to Cupertino.
Yeah, it's the price of a couple of iPhones, so it isn't outrageous. So they had their annual meeting. It doesn't often make much news. You know, sometimes you get like fun quotes. Like, I think the quote where Tim Cook says he doesn't care about the bloody ROI or return on investment about Apple's green energy initiatives, and then if you do, you should get out of the stock. Like, wasn't that from one of these?
That was 2014.
Yeah. This time there's like a little bit of a ruffling of feathers, where there is a known conservative leaning activist investor who, not in terms of like what Apple's do with their money, but that Apple making donations to certain groups he found to be offensive and spoke on behalf of people that agree with him. And I think Tim Cook had a line that was like, if you think, you know, Apple's doing something that you disagree with, come talk to me. If you think that what we're doing is wrong, come talk to me. It was like an invitation. I mean, there was some more stuff here. Like, I think, what did he say about the iPad?
This is kind of funny. Like, some of the investors use their 5 minutes of fame to like ask a very financial question or ask about the future of the business, which is kind of like the questions we hear on the quarterly earnings calls. And then some of the other people there, I think, are like longtime Apple fans and just have had stock since like the original Mac. They use the opportunity to just have a quick chat with, you know, the idols of the Apple executive team, because like Craig Federighi is there and Cook's there and stuff. And one of them asked about how he's meant to transfer video over the iPad Pro's USB-C port, kind of referring to the deficiencies in file transfer. Incredibly, they actually gave a normally, if I was there, my strategy would be to ask about something that they've announced but isn't available yet. I don't know what product that could be, but
something in the air.
Because generally, if you're if you're talking to an Apple executive, they're generally going to give you a no comment about any future plans of anything.
Yeah, and it's acceptable because what you expect.
Incredulously, on this occasion, they actually gave him a not non-answer. He asked about iPad Pro USB-C ports. Cook laughed, and Craig Federighi answered saying that new functionality in that realm is coming soon. And he jokingly asked Cook if he could pre-announce it. Obviously, they didn't do that, but yeah, that obviously ties into the whole iOS 13, you know, file improvement shebang.
Yeah, and the way that this is put on is it's in Steve Jobs' theater where the Apple iPhone events are and where the next news and TV event is expected to be. But it's not like a live stream. And it is open to press who are invited, but not in the room. They're in like an overflow room watching, like at tables watching a video of the event. And it isn't that like investor meetings can't be public. I think Facebook does theirs as a publicly viewed live stream. Apple doesn't. But they do a live stream for press that can cover it freely. Like nothing's off limits from what I can tell. So it's a weird balance of like how exposed is this. And one of the fun things is like you can quickly find enthusiastic people who are attending the events too, not just the press coverage, but like people who are in the room, like live tweeting it as enthusiastic investors and Apple fans. Because every year, it's never the same people, but it's always like someone who's on their way to Cupertino at the event, taking pictures around campus and everything. So it's a funny thing. One of the other things was someone had asked Tim Cook when Apple will put a second hand on the watch, the Apple Watch. Which we didn't find out, I don't think, if there was an answer to that or like what the response was. But that's a very curious question because I'm not sure if there are any or if there are many watch faces without a second hand of some sort. So
there were a few, like Mickey Mouse, for instance.
Yeah. So.
But in general, most of the watch faces have second hands.
Yeah, you've got to get there another way to not have a second hand than out of the box. So that was a curious one. But I guess they got tech support at the investors event. And then
that's what you pay $2,000 for, a bit of tech support.
It's worth it, yeah. And then the last thing in China, there are further discounts on the iPhones there to address upgrade concerns. So what's the story there?
Yeah, obviously it's a big overhanging question about the state of iPhone sales at the moment. We had the, you know, kind of terrible holiday quarter, where Apple missed guidance. But then we've kind of heard from Kuo and a few other analysts that the worst is kind of over and sales are stabilizing. At the same time, it now seems that Apple through third-party resellers, Apple itself has not changed the listing prices of any of its phones, but through the major resellers, and in China it's like Suning and JD.com, and they sell like the majority of iPhones there, it seems, as well as the iPhone XR. They did iPhone XR discounts in January. Now they've added iPhone XS and XS Max discounts of a pretty hefty sum for Chinese customers. You can get up to like $200 off the price of a XS Max, which is substantial. And obviously in China, you have to, because $200 on in the US would be like a huge percentage really off of a XS Max. If you look at in China, the base prices of the phones are higher anyway because of like taxes and import laws and all stuff. So generally, like the iPhones in China are like $200 more expensive than what you'd expect them to be anyway, just by doing currency conversion. So it's not as much of a percentage off, but still $200 off like a $1,400 phone is a significant discount that Apple doesn't normally do. And if they're doing discounts, maybe the sales aren't as good as people were kind of hoping. So it's kind of all eyes on the next round of earnings reports, which will come in April.
Yeah. All right. Well, that is the Happy Hour podcast for this week. You can follow us on Twitter at 95Mac. I'm at Apollo Zach, and Benjamin, you are
BZA Mayo.
And you can also email us at happyhour@95mac.com. And with that being said, we'll be back next week. Bye, everybody.